Without further ado, I give you Legion of News.
I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Thursday, July 8th, 2010. Repair work is continuing on Southeast McLaughlin Boulevard following a water main break that created a sinkhole. The incident happened Wednesday afternoon where McLaughlin and Ochoco meet. According to the Portland Water Bureau, a 12-inch cast iron pipe that is approximately 70 years old busted, possibly after someone hit a fire hydrant.
Is that actually the journalistic term, busted?
I think that's actually an official Water Bureau term.
It didn't go kerflooey?
All of the northbound lanes on Southeast McLaughlin Boulevard at Ochoco will remain closed throughout the day on Thursday. The southbound left lane will be closed as well. There's no estimate on when that stretch of road will reopen. Drivers are advised to avoid the area if possible.
Isn't that just sort of general advice for every stretch of road everywhere in Portland every day of the year? Just
especially during the summer.
If you can get away with not leaving the house today, or I would say, you know, for the next 2 or 3 months, I would choose that option.
Three Portland teenagers are safe after they were rescued in a child sex trafficking ring, according to police. Portland Police Bureau's Sex Crimes Unit, along with Gresham and the FBI, worked collectively to get the girls rescued within 1 week. Lendrick Lee Thomas, 33, is facing compelling prostitution and rape in the third degree. He was arrested at the downtown Marriott, where police conducted a sting on June 25th. Social workers tipped off police that a runaway, age 14, might have been prostituting herself. So police scoured exotic websites and set up a date with the girl. When Thomas drove up to the hotel in his BMW to drop her off, police moved in. According to an affidavit obtained by one of our local news channels, the girl told police Thomas had driven her to Seattle, Eugene, Sacramento, and Las Vegas during the last 2 months for purposes of prostitution. In that same affidavit, she told police Thomas used his cell phone to take nude pictures of her to post on websites and to check into various motels to conduct prostitution. Esther Nelson, who works at the Sexual Assault Resources Center, said a pimp will present himself as a boyfriend, even a modeling contract agent, to show that they are alluring. These were girls from good homes. The pimps flash money and they fall in love.
So, okay. Is the whole girls... Look, I don't know anything about her background, but I mean, what do you really need to know? The girls from good homes thing. She's 14?
She's 14.
So she's been gone for how long?
I'm not sure.
Is this some new definition of the phrase good home with which I was not previously familiar? Wouldn't you notice if your 14-year-old kid... I mean, unless she was just a big pain in the ass, wouldn't you notice that she was gone for a while?
I think good home is code for they weren't, like, trailer trash.
Is that the... they weren't those kind of people.
These were people who had good jobs.
I don't understand.
And they were, you know, white.
That's exactly... I think that is newspaper code for... I don't know. I mean, I thought it only happened with, those kind. I didn't know it happened with our kind. My whole world has come apart. So he was at the downtown Marriott here in Portland?
Yes.
Is that the one on the... not saying that I've gone there recently to patronize... You know what I'm asking. Is that the one on Front?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Because that's the only one... It's the only Marriott downtown. That's got to be embarrassing. You know, if you just pick up... Oh, that's fantastic. We've got some press for a fine hotel. Damn, child prostitution again.
Yeah, apparently there may have been a number of other girls that he was... turning out, is that the phrase we use?
Like you don't know. Like you're unfamiliar with it somehow. I don't know, Rick Emerson. I don't know anything about prostitution.
Everything I know about prostitution, I know from watching Law
Taxi
and Order,
Driver.
SVU.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Taxi Driver. That's all I know.
All my knowledge comes from Hardcore with George C. Scott, so you and I are pretty much on the same page. Where's my daughter? Here's the...
I was surprised reading the story to find out they still call them pimps.
No, I think pimp is a universal term. I think that is a... Look, just because it's been co-opted by some fat bastard at Lloyd Center doesn't mean that it's not still an accurate term. Why should Iceberg Slim yield his lexicon to some dick outside of Spencer's Gifts? You know, here's my question about...
So does pimp my ride therefore mean that you are turning out your car
no.
to be sexually serviced by others?
See, you know, this is one of those things where you're asking, but you know already, you're just trying to be, that's just a witticism on your part. That's a rhetorical question. You know the answer. Have you ever seen American Pimp, the Hughes Brothers film?
No, I haven't seen it.
Oh, it's quite good, actually. And those guys are not batting 1,000.
I do know it's hard out there. To be a pimp.
I don't see...
I do that from watching the Oscars.
I don't think that's true. When people say, we should do... Okay, here's the... I know we're getting ahead of ourselves, and we're actually just now... We're now sort of hybridizing our shows. But for the Rick Emerson show later on the day, today's pop culture authority is about the Hydrox cookie. So we'll get to that here in just a bit. But we ought to do an upcoming pop culture authority where we actually answer the question, is it in fact hard out there for a pimp? I'm going to do that for tomorrow.
Okay.
I'll make a note to myself.
You write that down.
My only observation before we get terminally sidetracked about the pimping is this. How do I phrase this so I don't sound like a repellent human being? Okay. I think we can all agree that child prostitution is immoral and wrong. I think the legal term for that is, in and of itself. It's, you know, objectively speaking.
You just say, this is wrong.
It's just wrong. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is,
it's
apart from...
It's universally considered wrong.
Apart from everything I'm about to say, we just know that it's wrong on its face.
You're not going to run into a lot of people who go, child prostitution, you know, that's not that bad.
I know, I was trying to out-clever myself by coming up with the Latin term for it, and I couldn't do that just now, so that was a big fail on my part. All I could come up with was, the quote of Adamus, which is the name of a Sports Night episode. Anyway, we can all agree that, you know, this is wrong for any number of reasons. All of those things notwithstanding, if you're this guy who's a pimp and you were deciding, you know, you're, well, what are you going to do with your life? Well, I'm going to go to grad school. What about you? I'm going to be an architect. What about you? I'm going to pimp. Why would you then choose child prostitution, which just seems like you are begging for the worst kind of legal trouble? You know what I mean? Is that hard to find women who are really willing to go out and just whore themselves?
Probably not. How many there are, then, you know.
And I suppose, and again, I'm just saying, looking at this from terms of pure cold economics, a guy who was going to engage in some incredibly illegal, very risky business like trafficking in underage sex, he might say, well, the profit margins are higher. You know, it's a niche market.
That's exactly the phrase I was going to use, too. I was thinking about that.
It's incredibly taboo, and so therefore people are willing to pay more for it because it's difficult to obtain. You know, I guess those will all be compelling financial incentives in some objective way. But you got to figure that the potential downside is just so much higher. And plus, you probably can't do that business for very long because the man is always looking to bust those way more than regular hookers.
He probably didn't really plan it out ahead of time, though. It was probably one of those situations where, you know, the opportunity presented itself and he realized, hey, I have this underage girl and there are men who want to have sex with underage girls, you know. This is the business I will go into.
You just sounded like Hyman Roth from The Godfather 2 there. This is the business we have chosen. All right. Well, let's not talk about this anymore. Okay. Here's Don Taylor.
A young man with plans to report to the Marine Corps in September lost his left hand and a large portion of his thigh after two powerful M1000 firecrackers exploded in his pocket. Surrounded by a crowd of people at a neighborhood 4th of July party in Oakland, 19-year-old Josh Myers pushed a 2-year-old girl away from him and covered his front left pocket with his hand, then fell to the ground after realizing the M1000s were about to explode.
That's got to be a uniquely terrifying moment when you realize your pockets are full of M1000s, but you've got about 4 seconds to think it over.
Oh, I shouldn't have flicked my lighter in the pocket with the firecrackers.
The things I do over.
I believe we have some audio for that.
We have some audio like you wouldn't believe. We got audio like an MF-er on this. This is a story about the guy who blew off part of his thigh, and I would imagine a good section of his junk with these fireworks. I believe at his cousin's house.
I look over.
Let me drop the teletype sounder so we can get the...
I look over his back pocket sparkling up. Saw one go off. He started running, going for the hose. Ran into the front yard. And then next thing I know, boom, boom. I heard screaming, and I ran up to him. Somebody got on the phone, called 911. Me and Mo automatically went to his side.
Me and Mo?
I'm in my dining room, and I already hear my cousin screaming that his hand's gone.
I think it's Mo.
When I got out there, it was really gone, and he was laying on my porch, so I laid right next to him, held him the whole time.
Hello, Don Taylor. How are you doing over there?
I was trying to take a drink of water just as it was lying on my porch, and I just lost it there.
To me, the money line is, he says, when I heard my cousin shouting that his hand was gone, and then I went out there, and it was really gone. Not like last time when he was just sticking in his sleeve and trying to be goofy. I love people. It's hard out there for that guy. That's who it's hard out there for.
At first I didn't think I lost my hand, Myers said.
But then I looked.
I thought it just take a bad blow. But then I ended up looking, and I was like, yeah, I saw it. My hand was gone.
Yes, as it was.
Meyer suspects that the M1000s had been ignited when flames from other fireworks in his back pocket were accidentally set on fire.
Uh-huh.
Witnesses said that the unidentified girl received stitches for injuries to her leg caused by the explosion. Myers is recovering in the hospital. It took away my dream, which was to join the United States Marine Corps and defend my country.
Damn it, we've all lost out then.
But the thought that just keeps going through my head is better me than that little girl, Myers said.
Well, who can disagree?
Myers bought the illegal M1000s off the street for about $20. Each firecracker is equal to about a quarter stick of dynamite.
Money well spent, friend. Money well spent. All right, there you go. I'm gonna play that cut later on today just to amuse myself. I don't even know if it's gonna be on the air. I mean, just walking around, I might just carry a little recorder in my pocket and then play it at lax moments.
It's your new cell phone ring.
It's gonna be my new text message ring. All right, here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
Vice President Joe Biden will be arriving in Portland around 10 a.m. today to take place at a fundraiser, which means he's already here. Since it's noon.
It's funny that nobody really cared about that or talked about it in any way or prepared for it yesterday. It's almost like he doesn't matter.
Biden will be helping Congressman Kurt Schrader. Kurt Schrader is not an easy name to say. Have you ever noticed that?
No. Kurt Schrader is...
That's awkward.
Yeah, I was going to say something, but never mind.
Anyway, he'll be helping Congressman Kurt Schrader raise money in an event in the Tiffany Center in downtown Portland. Tickets for the event, which are already sold out, so don't rush down there right now to go... started at $200 a person and up.
Really? Is that this is for the Biden thing?
Yeah.
I'm going to look right now.
Kurt Schrader is raising money so that he can run against Republican candidate Scott Brune.
Wait, and so Kurt Schrader is, I know he's running against Scott Brune. Who is he? Who is Kurt Schrader?
He's a congressman.
Is he really?
Yes, he is.
I don't know. I don't vote. Let's see here. I'm going to see if these tickets... I'm going to see if anybody's scalping Biden tickets on Craigslist, okay. As though I don't already know the answer. Hold on a second. Biden. I'm just going to use it as a search term, because what clarifying words could I possibly need?
Anyway, right. If you're in town for this also, by the way, and you're hoping to find underage prostitutes at the Portland Marriott while you're in town, they're all out.
By the way, looking on Craigslist, in the for sale section, the only result that comes back for the search term Biden... is a $1 ad where somebody is trading some Blu-ray DVDs featuring what I'm hoping is the name of the movie, because otherwise it's a really egregious spelling error that indicates bad things for our future. He's trading the Blu-ray copy of a movie called Law Biden Citizen.
Oh, there should be a movie called Law Biden Citizen.
I don't know whether that's a real movie or not, but I mean, it's sandwiched between The Road and The Stepfather. And so I have no idea what kind of person this is. Anyway, so there you go. Law Biden Citizen. That's the only result. So no, I'm sorry. Your tickets for Joe Biden, they're gone, baby, gone. Yeah, no way to get those. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
The average weight for a twin baby at birth is 5 pounds, 5 ounces. So imagine having twins that weigh nearly 10 pounds each. That's what happened to a Cincinnati mother. Tamara Kenkowski gave birth to her twin sons, Lucas and Dylan, at Bethesda North Hospital earlier this week. Lucas weighed 10 pounds, 2 ounces, and Dylan weighed 9 pounds, 9 ounces. It's just short of a world record of a combined weight of 23 pounds, 12 ounces set in Great Britain a few years ago. It was a shock, said Kenkowski. We weren't planning to have twins, so this is God blessing us with two.
Yes, he's blessing you. He's blessing you with stitches and tearing is what he's blessing you with.
Lucas and Dylan are the 6th and 7th children for the Kenkowskis. I have big babies anyway, but we thought with twins we would actually have little babies, Kenkowski said. But we were at about 36 weeks when we found out we were going to be bigger than that, and we realized we were going to have toddlers again.
Is this the husband talking?
No, this is her.
Okay, I was going to say, because I don't imagine she appreciates the husband running his mouth like with the we there, the collective pronoun.
It's too early to tell if they're identical. Tests will be complete in a few weeks. With brilliant scientific insight, Kenkowski said, they seem to look more and more alike each time we look at them.
The twins do, you say?
The babies that were just born last week.
My God. Wonders never cease. This is why we don't allow ninth-month abortions, by the way. Because, you know, about halfway through that delivery, the mom would be like, "That's just give me the plunger. I'll do it myself.
Did you catch the part on that this is the this is her sixth pregnancy.
Yes.
This is the 6th and 7th.
Well, that's the way that these... That's the thing is, whenever you hear... Look, here's... In my estimation, here's a good rule of thumb. If you want to know if somebody is either a religious nutcase or someone with an overactive reproductive system, or quite usually both, the biggest tip-off is that you're reading about them in the news. Because really, if you're the newspaper guy, how would you ever find out about that? You probably wouldn't. It's somebody with the family calling up the newspaper. Have I got a story for you? My wife's got an overactive vagina. It's the most amazing thing. Come on, this babies come out of it all the time.
And she just had two babies, each the size of a bowling ball.
Yeah, I mean, and so, you know, but when you said it's her sixth pregnancy, I mean, yeah. That's the, you know, I think at some point we are all taking part in some sort of some sort of an ant farm or some sort of a reality program set up by beings from another world, just to see what sort of attitudinal and behavioral mutations set in after X years. And families like this are one of them, or like that Duggar family, where the wife is, you know, she's just shoved out like the 19th kid or something last year.
Oh, God, yeah.
So, anyway, here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk on this Thursday.
Senate Republicans have filibustered a bill to extend unemployment benefits, saying it would add to the federal deficit. The Economic Policy Institute's Lawrence Michel disagrees, saying an extension of benefits is good for the economy. And I believe you actually have something. Is this of him saying something?
We do. I have actually four cuts here, and I just want to make sure that I'm playing the right one. So it. Is this the cut from the guy saying that they are good for the economy,
yes,
or that they are bad?
That he says they're good for the economy.
All right, I think I've got that right here. This is Lawrence.
Unemployment benefits, when they're extended for as long as we're talking about 2 years, do increase the amount of unemployment. They discourage.
Oh no, this is another guy. This is a guy who is bitching about it. Hold on, let me see if I got the
unemployed people who are desperate get the money and they're going to spend it. I calculate that unemployment compensation we've been paying out earlier this year is responsible for around 1.5 million jobs now that we didn't have back in 2007.
Well, how the hell does that work? If it is somehow,
I don't get that logic at all.
Unemployed people who are desperate get the money and they're going to spend it. I calculate that unemployment compensation we've been paying out earlier this year is responsible for around 1.5 million jobs now that we didn't have back in 2007.
Who is this guy? What is his job?
Well, that's
Lawrence Michel.
Lawrence Michel of the Economic Policy Institute.
He's just making that up. That's just a thing he's pulled out of his ass there.
I'm all in favor of them extending unemployment benefits, but I have to say what he just said makes no sense.
Oh, no, don't get me wrong. You want to hand me some free money? Rick Emerson's going to take that. Unemployment for all, I say. But the idea that somehow unless his argument, which I guess would have some merit, is that when Americans get their unemployment check, they don't use it for, you know, to buy the staples of life or to go in the bank, that they just take it out and they buy lottery tickets and smokes with it, which I'm not going to disagree with. It seems like that probably is true for 40% of people.
So unemployment benefits are there for keeping people employed in the lottery ticket and cigarette industry.
Exactly. If you are in the business of tracking any kind of vice or perhaps something that has a picture of Scarface on the front, maybe you're doing real well in these hard economic times.
Yeah, as the employment rate plummets, the folks at Mickey's Big Mouth are just happier and happier.
Yes, they are. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Well, I believe you also have audio from the Cato Institute's Michael Tanner. That is a conservative think tank. And he says extending unemployment benefits does not have the stimulative effect on the economy that its supporters say.
Okay, that was the guy we heard earlier, I think, Johnny Buzzkill. Let me see if I can rack up that.
Unemployment benefits, when they're extended for as long as we're talking about 2 years, do increase the amount of unemployment. They discourage people from looking for work as hard as they might otherwise do. It's just human nature. And they discourage people from taking suboptimal jobs.
God, Reverend Lovejoy weighs in. It's all gabble this and gabble that. You are concealing, and poorly, I might add, some sort of contempt or a cutting
remark.
I hate
all of these people.
Well,
I just do.
The thing about it, the thing that bothers me about this is, and I know that I've made an observation that a billion people have made before, the thing that bugs me here is what we all know, which is they can't both be right. You know, one of those guys is right, and one of those guys is wrong. And so the story just becomes...
Well, they could both be wrong, too, because that first guy, while, you know, he's fighting on the side that I personally think is correct, he's still spouting nonsense.
Well, when the tip off is when a guy in a news story says, "Well, by my calculations," and when he says "by my calculations," that means by only his calculations. He has not conferred with anybody else, and or all of his colleagues think he's a loon. But that you'll all see someday, my magical car will work. You'll all be proven wrong. So, all I know is this: that the number of people that I know who have filed for unemployment over the last, I don't know, probably 50% of the people that I know sort of casually, socially, have filed for unemployment or are on unemployment now, and there's, I don't know, maybe one or two of them that have really had to go, and they've had to kind of go to the mat to keep their benefits going. And so every time a story like this comes out, everybody just sits there at home in this advanced state of dread and agita, thinking that their benefits are going to get cut. Because then the real question is, like, what do you do then? All kidding aside, I have no idea. I mean, if you're on unemployment and you're looking for a gig and you can't find one, and the man says, "Oh, by the way, there's no more unemployment. Thank you," and it's gone. I mean, I just it's a freaky place to be. It really is.
I have a friend who's in that situation. He was had worked for years for the Vancouver Library, and was laid off in sort of one of the situations where he got a new supervisor who didn't like him very much, and she found a reason to lay him off. So, as part of his getting unemployment, he had to do some kind of a job retraining thing. And he went to school and learned medical transcriptionist. He can't find a job as a medical transcriptionist because apparently there's 7 billion people on unemployment learning to be medical transcriptionists. And now his unemployment's running out after he said, "Okay, I'll learn to do something else." Well, now I can't find a job doing that either.
Well, and the problem is, I think that everybody, when they're unemployed or when they are when they are relieved from an industry that they don't plan to re-enter or where there are no more jobs. I don't know if I've told the story or not about... I probably have, but the story about our good friend Tim Riley, who this is back in the fall of winter of 2008 when we were working at 970 and Tim had been laid off by CBS. And so he wanted to go back and finish his education, which is actually what he's doing now, sort of a year and a half later. But he'd gone back to school, and he was filling out, his financial aid forms, and the woman saying you're eligible for this kind of grant and this kind of loan and whatever. And Tim says, "Well, okay, so is there anything else for which I'm eligible, just so I don't miss anything?" And the woman says, "Well, what industry are you coming from?" And he said, "Well, I was a radio news person." She said, "Oh, you worked in radio?" And I wish I could remember the actual phrase, but she said something very similar to, "Oh, you're eligible for our dying industry loan. Hold on, let me get that paperwork." And he said it was just the most mixed feelings. It was sort of like, "Oh, well, fantastic."
I've only been on unemployment once, and it was after I lost my job as an editor of a newspaper.
God. I mean, it's just like one of those widowmaker industries where you walk in and they go, "Oh, you poor bastard."
Yeah, and I went in to fill out the paperwork and talk to the person and do the stuff, and then it was like, she's like, "Well, and let's see what it is, what industry you're in, what you're doing." She's, "Oh, you were, oh. And she just looked at me, and the look on her face, like, oh, and I just knew immediately, "Oh, we don't have any jobs for anyone doing this." I was like,
"You fix ice wagons, huh? Fantastic." But the problem is that as people leave their industry, and if it's an industry that where they don't plan to be going back, or they just figure like there's no future for me there, everybody does the same thing. They all look for that confluence of income and ease of insertion into the industry. In other words, what's the highest paying job I can get with the lowest amount of training or the shortest turnaround time? And then they see something like medical transcriptionist because they all have like a cousin named Jerry, and his wife earns big money making that medical transcription stuff happen. And it only took her like 3 months to learn it. She's already pulling down a big salary and dental. And so then everybody, a guy on your block decides to become a medical transcriptionist or whatever, and then nobody can get work doing that. But it's the same in every, my wife is a nurse, and this was just like 4 years ago maybe, and I don't think this is because of the recession. I think it's because of the cyclical nature of these things, I say with all my vast knowledge of macroeconomics. When she was going to school just like 4 or 5 years ago, It was that where there was a dearth of nurses because baby boomers were starting to keel over by the millions every day. And they said, like, finish school now because we've got more jobs than we can possibly fill and we need nurses like stat. So it, just finish it up and we'll send you everywhere you want, you know, anywhere you want to go, we'll get you a job there. So she finishes school, gets a job like that. And now all the people that she was sort of talking to at that time who were like, that sounds awesome. I think I'll go to nursing school. They are all now leaving nursing school, and then they're just like sitting at home shoving Red Baron pizza into their mouth and crying because they can't get jobs anywhere. So it's, I guess what I'm saying is there is no hope. Here's Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
Let's do a little science news.
Science on the March, brought to you by Legion of News right here at PDX.FM.
French doctors have carried out a successful full face transplant, eyelids, tear ducts, and all, on a 35-year-old man. Doctors carried out the operation at the end of June on the man whose face had been deformed by a genetic disorder. The man was named only as Jerome. The doctor who carried out the operation, Laurent Lantieri, was quoted by the newspaper as saying it was a world first, although Spanish doctors in April said they had performed a similar procedure. My patient is doing well. He is walking, eating, talking. His beard has started to grow back on his new face, said Jesus. Dr. Lantieri.
Does it really count as being his beard?
Well, it's his face now.
Well, that's, but he doesn't
get... So now it's his beard.
He doesn't get credit for the beard growing back. It's not his.
If there are pimples on that skin, those are now his pimples.
I suppose.
The first time he looked at himself in the mirror, he stuck both thumbs up, Dr. Lantieri said. He was waiting for this transplant for 2 years. He is very happy. The patient was not immediately available to talk about the operation.
Yeah, I like the idea that they're not going to identify the guy as though it won't be obvious who it is when he goes back to his neighborhood. You know what I mean?
Oh, you must be the...
You know, when somebody comes over and, hey, Tom,
Hey, new face?
Did you cut your hair? New contacts? There's something different about you, but I can't quite put my finger on it. Oh, yes, you're wearing someone else's face. How good for you.
A full face transplant involves the removal of the entire face from a corpse, including mouth and eyelids, and grafting it onto the patient.
Look, here's the thing. I didn't go to medical school, but I think I could have sussed out exactly what a full face transplant entails.
The nerves and blood vessels are connected under a microscope. We are the first to have done a full face transplant, including eyelids and tear ducts. I am proud because this has been done in France, Dr. Lantieri is quoted as saying.
This sounds like such a fine point of distinction. What does he mean they're the first if Spain... And didn't Britain do it like...
Well, this is the first one where they actually did eyelids and working tear ducts.
Okay. So it's just a matter of degrees now. It's
right.
It's become a game of inches.
Now, it's how complete is the full face transplant.
I see. So they've done eyelids and tear... Well, wait a minute. I call shenanigans on this. Because if they did a transplant in Britain, I think, a year and a half ago or something like that. And then, as the article itself says, they did one in Spain maybe a year ago. If they didn't do eyelids, what is the guy in Britain just walking around looking at everything all the time? I mean, is he just staying?
They didn't need eyelids.
How is it that your entire face would need to be transplanted, but your eyelids survived the roaring inferno that removed the rest of your facial skin? That seems implausible.
Well, I don't know. Like, in 2005, there was the woman who got a new nose, lips, and chin.
But that's not your
Because her face had been mauled by a dog.
But that's not... Okay. I'm just picturing the guy in Britain at home just staring at the ceiling. I wish I could sleep! You know, just eyes wide open.
Well, maybe his wasn't a full... face transplant.
Okay.
The
only distinction they're making is, never mind, let's move on.
They're very proud of the tear ducts.
Okay.
Let's give them the tear ducts.
All right, then. You are listening to Legion of News right here on PDX.FM. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Dawn Taylor. Don't forget, coming up at 1 o'clock at rickemerson.com, the Rick Emerson Show will be gracing your airwaves and your ears. Coming up in that program, we have today's Pop Culture Authority. What is today's Pop Culture Authority question, Dawn Taylor?
The question is, are Hydrox cookies really just knockoffs of Oreos?
We're talking about Hydrox cookies as part of today's Pop Culture Authority. Also another installment of the greatest songs ever made. We have a Corpse Watch, I believe, coming up today of some variety. We have a Corpse Watch of... Is it a Corpse Watch or is it a watch of... Is it a Geek Watch?
Penis Watch and
Clergy
Watch.
Sorry, Penis Watch, Clergy Watch, coming up later on today as well. The Rick Emerson Show begins at 1 o'clock at rickemerson.com. This is Legion of News. This is Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News desk.
Researchers at Oregon State University, led by wood science professor Kai Chang Lee, recently stumbled on a new form of adhesive that they say is just as good as those currently used in various tapes, stick-on notes, and stamps. But Lee said the new adhesive costs half as much to make and uses none of the petroleum-based solvents and chemicals now used in adhesive manufacturing.
So they've created a better Post-it note.
Yes, exactly.
All right. It's funny how the journalists will just not come out and say what everybody is thinking, which is that they've created a Post-it note, because that's what everybody calls it. An adhesive note or an adhesive tape or whatever.
But Post-it is, of course, a trademark.
Yeah, that doesn't matter, though. This is a news story. It's not like they have to somehow, it's not like they can't talk about it in the context of a news. We're a news show, and I'm saying it right now. You know why? Because it's part of the factual discourse involved with the story. All right, well, in any event.
The university is seeking a patent on the formula and is already talking with private companies interested in manufacturing and selling the adhesive. Lee said the new material is derived from a substance known more for slipperiness than stickiness, vegetable oil. He declined to go into detail on the formula while the patent application is pending, but he said it's a very simple recipe that at high heat turns the oil into glue. Glue is what Lee and his postdoctoral research associate were looking for when they started messing with oil-based formulas. They were trying to develop something much different, an environmentally friendly adhesive that would be solid at room temperature but melt at high temperatures. That didn't work, but while they were testing their different chemical recipes, Lee noticed that at a certain stage of the reaction, the material became really sticky at room temperature.
Does this article in fact say they were messing around?
It does indeed.
So we have
they're messing with oil-based formulas.
We have the water department earlier saying something is busted, and now we have this story saying that these scientists are, quote, messing around.
Print journalism is
really
just...
I'm out of line for suggesting that they just say Post-it notes.
This is why print journalism is dying.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Hey, I won't say who this is. There are a handful of people who may know the person about whom I'm speaking, but it doesn't really matter for the purposes of this story. I have an acquaintance who has an acquaintance who works at the 3M company. And, you know, 3M, of course, is the company who created Post-it notes. And just think about what a massively useful invention Post-it notes. I mean, where would we be? That's one of those things that you use 1,000 times a week in one form or another, and you just have no... You have no comprehension of how massively it has blessed your life and how it's made your existence an easier and better thing. But he has an acquaintance who works at the 3M company, and he has told me occasionally, after being into his cups, about some of the things they have created that they've just never marketed. It's like Wonka's factory in there, apparently, where there's just warehouses full of, like, the Covenant Arc-style adhesive products that they've just decided to, like, well, we'll give this to them when they're ready. The great unwashed, are not yet, like, our human minds could not conceive of some of the things they've created. The one that he did share with me, and this sort of reminds me of, like, it's like how I always suspect that auto manufacturers have every version of a car for the next 50 years made from the get-go, and then they just parcel it out like a year at a time to get us to keep buying them. He described this one product at 3M that is effectively a welcome mat that operates like a big pad of Post-its, where when the top pad is dirty, you just tear it off and throw it away, and then you got a new welcome mat right underneath it. How awesome is that?
They have this product that I've never purchased it. I've yet to buy it, but I find it completely fascinating. They make these plastic hooks for hanging pictures or anything you might want to hang on the wall. And you pull the thing off, and it's sticky on the back. You stick it to the wall. It's a super high adhesive, so you can hang something fairly heavy on it. But when you want to remove it from the wall later, it's got a little tab on the bottom, and you pull it, and it stretches the adhesive out. And the thing just comes right off the wall and leaves nothing behind.
Wow.
And it's like, that's one of those things where science sort of becomes magic, that you're just going, that's awesome.
That is awesome. I don't even have any use for that product, and I want to go buy it. There is no demonstrable purpose for that product in my life, but I want to go pick one up, like, right now. Fantastic. Here's Don Taylor with Science on the March.
I believe that is actually all of our science news.
Fantastic. You are listening to Legion of News right here on PDX.FM. Don't forget, speaking of science and technology and all things that are glorious and wonderful, if you would like to hear this show on a handheld device of some kind, you can do so by going to mobile.pdx.fm. That is mobile.pdx.fm. That is where you may hear this on your BlackBerry, on your iPhone, on your... I don't even know if they still use Palms for stuff. I think they sell them, but I don't really... That's a thing you see for sale, and it just sort of strikes me as sad. And I wonder if... I wonder if they've just forgotten to take it off the shelf. But you can listen to this program right there, mobile.pdx.fm. It is archived here later on in the day as well at pdx.fm. This is Dawn Taylor.
As it continues to try to drill in a relief well, BP continues to try and minimize the flow of oil into the Gulf of Mexico. Incident Commander Thad Allen says they're trying to get a new, better containment cap on the leak. The first relief well BP is drilling in the Gulf of Mexico could intercept the leaking Deepwater Horizon well in 7 to 10 days, he said. And I believe we have some sort of audio.
So this is them trying to, this is like their fifth attempt now, or their ninth attempt, or their 17th attempt to put some sort of a cap on this thing, which clearly, that phrase, you can't cry over spilt milk, I mean, the horse has left the barn and lived a full life and been made into some sort of a nutritious snack for your dog at this point.
Well, the phrase is don't cry over spilt milk. You can cry over it, but you shouldn't.
But it's pointless.
Yeah.
But it is not a fruitful use of your
exactly.
time. All right, so here's some discussion about the Gulf alleged cleanup.
It could move that date up, but for right now, my official position is that it'll be the middle of August before this well is capped.
So it's now that he's saying it's the middle of August. When it first happened, I think they said, well, I don't know, give us a few hours and we'll be able to figure something else out down there. All right. So they claim now in the middle of August they're going to be able to cap this, which I think we all know is that's what journalists would call a lord of hornswoggle is what that is.
That's the term for that?
There's just no truth happening there at all. That's a statement completely without calories or facts of any kind.
I get the sense that you don't trust this man.
It's not that I just don't trust them. It's just that they have no idea what they're talking about. I mean, he may believe that. He may think it to be true. He may, in his soul, have absolute faith in the idea that they're going to get it taken care of. But they probably, to be honest, they probably didn't think the thing was going to blow up in the first place. I mean, it's easy to say that they're just sort of evil or uncaring or that they have no heart or they're willfully being destructive to the environment. But he probably has some guy sitting in a room with him that says, no, it's going to be fine. No, it won't kill everything. Just sign here. And he went, well, okay, you're the scientist.
Well, when you think about it, pretty much the history of human endeavor is us screwing things up and then figuring out ways to fix it. We always figure out some way to fix it eventually.
Yeah.
So I think part of the problem is it's just inconceivable that it won't be fixed.
Because we're humans. We can fix anything we want. You know, it's like we can't pave roads correctly. So, I mean, I'm not even really, you know, it's like that thing they've tried to send to Mars like 100 times to send back data. You know, that's just a big radio, right? Mm-hmm. Like we're just trying to send a radio up there. And we can't manage to do it without crashing it into the surface of the planet at like 1 billion miles an hour, reducing it to powder. So, the idea that we're going to be able to hold back the force of all the Earth as it tries to spew oil out of a crack in the ocean, I mean, with the sort of pressure and velocity that I cannot even conceive, you know, by like sticking a plastic bucket top on it or something is just that seems like an implausible approach.
Yeah, I don't think anyone really wants to acknowledge the idea that it's quite possible that we will be saying to the next generation of humans, you know, we'll be pointing at the Gulf of Mexico and say, you know, there used to be fish and stuff in there.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, sometimes you break stuff and it's just not going to get fit. All the king's horses and all the queen's hair will not be able to plug this, regardless of what the nice man on television tells you. So just be okay. And here's the thing. I'm just sort of zen with it. That is why if I appear indifferent, I mean, I guess you could call it a kind of indifference, but this is why I don't...
Do you think you might live, like, maybe feel differently if you, say, lived in New Orleans?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to make light of it. I'm not saying... I'm really not. It sounds like I am, and I really am not trying to minimize the impact that it's having on the economy or on the people who live there or on the tourism or on the aesthetic appeal of any of the Gulf of Mexico or any of that.
Reckon the shrimp.
Yeah, and I'm not,
And I like shrimp.
And it's not like I turn on the TV and they show, Sammy the box turtle is no longer able to go back home, and there's a girl scrubbing him with a toothbrush. It's not like I don't care about that. I mean, that stuff bumps me out like everybody. But the reason that I have just sort of a well, what can you do, sort of approach to it is the same reason that I don't recycle, because the Earth the Earth is stronger than we are, and always will be. And there's nothing we could, you know, people say, wait, we're going to destroy the, we're not going to destroy the Earth. We'll destroy ourselves. I mean, we will manage to eliminate ourselves from the gene pool at some point. You know, now we may take a fair number of fish and ducks with us, but you know what? So do asteroids. You know, it's, things die all the time. All I'm saying is, there's nothing we could possibly do that is stronger or that cannot be overpowered by the Earth itself, as evidenced by this. This, like, the next time somebody tells you that, you know, well, you know, we're killing Mother Earth, take a good look at which way that equation is going with all the oil pouring out of the ocean into the water, which is not going to kill the Earth. That's just going to kill us. So there's no killing the Earth that's going to happen. So it's just, you know, we will screw things up badly enough one of these days, and we'll go one step over the line, and the Earth will just decide to get rid of us, and we'll be gone to trouble the Earth no more. So I don't care. I'm just saying, that's,
I'm, you know, deeply depressed now.
But see, you shouldn't be.
You have bummed me out.
But it should give you sort of a Zen approach to life, in that you don't need to be invested, you know, in going out and protecting the environment. And when's the, you know, it was just like last week, I saw some article with one of those guys who's like out at Lincoln City or something. He's walking along the beach. What a great wave that is. Oh, my God, there's a log. Bam, one less guy. So,
you know what stopped me from being a zealous recycler? Working in a hotel kitchen. When I saw how much crap we were putting in the dumpster every day at my job, and thought about me like rinsing out my milk bottle once a week to put in the recycling thing, I just went,
well, and
that's
look,
so depressing.
And look, and I hate to be this guy, but when they say, well, you know, when we're creating things, it just the way we've operated, we're just, it's not natural. We have imposed unnatural conditions. It is definitionally impossible. It just by terms of sheer verbiage, it is impossible for humans to do something unnatural. We are part of nature. So everything we do is part of nature. And people don't like to accept that, because then it means that standing on a clipboard on Hawthorne really is just about getting girls and not fixing anything. And no one likes to be honest about that truth. But I see it to be I see it to be self-evident. Here's Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Let's go into our entertainment news segment.
Fantastic. Here's your entertainment news. Are you saying I'm not entertaining right
You're
now?
You're highly entertaining. The Fox series Glee received 19 nominations Thursday morning as the picks for the 62nd Primetime Emmy Awards were announced. Among the nods, Best Comedy Series, Best Actor in a Comedy Series for Matthew Morrison, and Best Actress in a Comedy Series for Lea Michele. The Pacific, the HBO miniseries, topped all the entrants with 24 nominations. Modern Family earned 14 nominations.
I have not seen Modern Family, but it's one of those things
everybody
raves about it. And I know, and I think we'll have some audio from this later on. When they did the nominations for this, somebody said Modern Family, and you hear like the whole, you know, like the sort of, you know, like the Arsenio Dog Pound starts up in the background. I know almost nothing about that show. That's one of those things that I managed to. When did that show hit the air?
It's already run its first season.
Okay, so it's been at least a year. Yeah. See, and I've so completely dropped out.
No, it is hilarious. It is quite delightful.
I'm just now starting that Justified show that you get me on, and I
was I right?
Yeah. No, it's fantastic. So Justified is good, but there's this long list of things that I need to catch up on, and Modern Family is one of them, because everybody I know is like, "Have you seen Modern Family?"
Conan O'Brien's Tonight Show was nominated for Best Variety Music or Comedy Series, while Jay Leno and David Letterman were both shut out of the category. So that's kind of interesting. Also not getting nominated for anything, Charlie Sheen, who had been nominated 4 years in a row for 2 and a Half Men, before this year, what with him possibly going to have to go to jail for domestic abuse, apparently they decided not to nominate
him. Here's the funny thing about Charlie Sheen. This, by the way, is the only funny thing about Charlie Sheen. When I tape Outlook Portland at the CW, which, of course, is the home to 2 and a Half Men, as I tape, and I don't know if you saw this, I don't know if it was up when you were there last, when you were on the show with Mike Russell. When you tape Outlook Portland, there is, in fact, a massive portrait of Charlie Sheen, just his head, It's just a huge Charlie Sheen head on the opposite wall of the studio that stares down at you as you do the program.
Wow.
And so it's like it's like being under the watchful visage of God, except that God is not, as Eddie Izzard would tell you, James Mason. He is, in fact, Charlie Sheen. I think it's Charlie Sheen and the kid. John Cryer can't be seen. It's the one and a half men. And he sort of looks down at you, passing judgment as you tape.
Maybe so. John Cryer's head got stolen. You know, his mother lives here in Portland.
John Cryer's mother lives here in Portland?
Yes. She's an actress named Gretchen Cryer, and she does a lot of work locally.
Fantastic. We should have her on. We should create some sort of bit where we just interview relatives that you don't care about of famous people you do.
Well, yeah, we have quite a few of those in Portland, I think, too.
I think Anthony Kiedis' father lives here.
And Sam Elliott grew up here, so his mom still lives here.
How lives, as in is alive?
Yeah.
Sam Elliott's mother is alive?
Well, she was a couple of years ago. I mean, she might not be now, but yeah, no, Sam Elliott went to high school here in Portland.
How old is Sam Elliott?
He's probably 60-ish.
He's that young?
Yeah.
Sam Elliott seems like he's Methuselah aged. I mean, he's like Turin aged. All right. Well, whatever. Okay.
Well, it's that gravelly voice.
Sam Elliott went to high school in Portland. How is it that I've lived here most of my life and I didn't know that?
I don't know.
This is like, okay, let me ask you this. Is Sally Struthers from here?
That I don't know.
See, that's one of those things that I, in the back, it's like a tickle in the back of my brain where there's is something telling me that Sally Struthers is from here. See, I'm not a relentless bleak beam of black sunshine.
No.
Just because I don't recycle or care about the earth in any way. I care about Sally Struthers and whether or not she... I care about Sally Struthers, and Sally Struthers cares about the earth. Therefore, through the mathematical transitive property... I care about the earth.
And she was quite charming on Gilmore Girls.
She really was. Boy, but that was one of those things where you look and you go, how cruel is the passing hand of time? I mean, she was never really a looker. She was sort of cute, but not really ever hot. But I remember seeing her on the Gilmore Girls and going, what? Who is that? There's somebody lurking under... Oh, my God. And then the full horror of the situation... becomes evident.
Shelley Winters was smoking hot when she was young.
Boy, that's true. We had to do a top five, and it's not even about age, because you can age and still look very attractive. It's just sometimes you don't even look like the same person. And that was the thing with Sally Struthers to me. I just didn't even recognize her.
Have you ever seen pictures of Ricky Gervais when he was a young pop idol in his early 20s? He was pretty.
Okay.
He was really pretty.
Let's talk about this next hour. We're going to make a note of this. All right.
All right. Did you have audio you want to play, or should we just move on?
Well, let's just move on. We got the nominees.
Okay.
By the way, the Rick Emerson Show comes up at 1 o'clock at rickemerson.com. Coming up today, we will have a penis watch, also a clergy watch on the way. We'll talk to Mr. Greg Nibbler about LeBron James, because right now, for us, it would be a fool's errand for us to try to discuss that story with any sort of depth or specificity.
I know nothing about it. I barely know the name LeBron James, so it would not work.
So Greg Nibbler, late of the Rick Emerson Show, and now Fun Employment Radio, will be joining us next hour to talk about LeBron James. We have a clergy watch, as I said. We have a penis watch coming up, another installment of the greatest songs ever made. And today's pop culture authority asks the magical question, are Hydrox cookies a knockoff of Oreos? Here's Don Taylor.
If you want to watch something new on television tonight, remember there is a new episode of Futurama on Comedy Central. Tonight, Bender has a personal stake in a ballot initiative that would legalize marriage between humans and robots.
Fantastic.
On Mall Cops, Mall of America, the mall's undercover unit trains its newest member, a bomb-sniffing dog named Bear. Later, the mall goes on high alert when a serious threat shuts down a nearby airport. On Police Women of Memphis, Joy deals with a truant teen, and Erica goes beyond the call of duty by retrieving a detainee's gold teeth for him. And there is a new episode of Ace of Cakes in which Duff builds his tallest cake ever, modeled after an Egyptian pharaoh.
That's exactly what that's how the pharaohs wanted to be remembered. With a sugar and lard-filled concoction being served to idiots on a reality program. The thing about Mall Cops is, when I saw that reality show, for a minute I thought it was like a goof. I thought it was a mock show that they had put together for like the Paul Blart DVD release or something, or like Paul Blart 2. And then I realized that it is an actual program which has been extant for quite some time. Which, everybody says that thing about in the future, but people will be famous for 15 minutes. But first of all, it's not the future anyway. It is just now. It's now later today, and that 15 minutes is now about 4.5 minutes. After which, it will just run endlessly on its own boutique pay-per-view channel somewhere. All right, here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
That is all of your entertainment news for today.
And again, don't forget this program is archived right here at pdx.fm. Every day you can also find those archives at legionofnews.com, and you can listen on your mobile device at mobile.pdx.fm. Once again, Don Taylor.
You can also, by the way, subscribe to us on iTunes.
That's right. Thank you for, that's the thing is I had, these show notes that I made like day one that have then never been updated. So thank you for mentioning that. Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Investigators looking for shoplifting suspects took away a dozen sick cats from a Citrus Heights, California home Tuesday and confiscated more cats the next day. The search of a home was prompted by a criminal shoplifting investigation at a nearby Walmart. When police knocked on the door, they noticed a strong stench and evidence of hoarding. Officials took away 12 cats, which were euthanized. On Wednesday, officials returned to the house and seized 70 additional cats. These animals will be taken to Sacramento County Animal Care and Regulation. Five people live in the home. At least one person has been arrested on shoplifting charges. An investigation is continuing whether animal cruelty charges will also be filed. Neighbors said they're happy that something is being done about the house. Everybody's tired about it. There's more cats than there needs to be. I mean, there's more cats than children around here, said a neighbor.
Can we just start ascribing every quote to toothless local Rube Earl Wiggins? Just because that's a phrase that stuck in my head some years ago, and it just seems to apply to about 40% of these stories.
Investigators continued to search Wednesday for even more animals, as sounds of cats could be heard within the home.
Oh, that's creepy. See, I don't know why that's creepy, but it is. Because that implies that maybe the cats have fallen into some nether dimension.
They took out, like, over 80 cats.
I wonder why...
And they're still hearing cats in the walls.
That's... Really? Is this like that episode of MASH where Hawkeye keeps smelling mildew even though there is none, and it turns out it's because his cousin drowned when they were fishing at Lake Penobscot? Or whatever the hell. All right. I can still hear the cats, George! Make the cats leave me alone! Here's Don Taylor.
The Spanish Prime Minister has jokingly offered state protection for the German octopus that has predicted a slew of correct results for World Cup matches. The octopus, called Paul by his handlers, has predicted the outcome of all of six of Germany's matches by choosing to eat a morsel of food from boxes emblazoned with the flags of the German team or its rival. Four times he chose the Germans and they won. Twice he chose their rivals and they won as well. Now Spain's politicians are worried that some German fans may take revenge on the octopus. I am concerned for the octopus. I am thinking of sending him a protective team, joked Spanish Prime Minister José Zapatero on Radio Cadena Ser. His Environment and Fisheries Minister, Elena Espinosa, also suggested a moratorium on going after Paul, saying, on Monday, I shall be at the European Council of Ministers, and I shall be asking for a fishing ban on Paul the octopus so the Germans do not eat him.
It's good to know, because sometimes I think that politicians in America waste their time. And, and that we vote these guys into office and then they'll spend, like 3 days pardoning a turkey or something. It's good to know that this is not simply an American phenomenon. It happens all around the world.
Some German fans have posted messages on internet forums suggesting that Paul's reward for his clairvoyant powers should be a meeting with the barbecue or the paella pot.
Or, I don't know, how about not living your life in a glass cage being prodded and poked at by idiots? How about that, huh? Right. This is going to be human offense number 755 when Paul's relatives someday stride across the land like a sort of tentacle-laden colossus. Let's do a couple more here as we are heading toward the top of the hour. Here's what's happening right now is Dawn is, in fact, holding pieces of paper that have minuscule print on them across the room, upside down.
They're the ones you gave me, and you circled things, so I figured you would recognize them as being ones that have audio. I am gesturing at them as if to say, should we do one of the ones with audio?
I'm just saying, you realize that the papers you're holding up have no identifying characteristics or marks or pictures and are upside down.
They're the ones you get. You circled. The circles are yours. See those circles?
Okay, I handed you seven pieces of paper that all look exactly the same.
Well, I'm sorry. The gesture was, shall I read a different story or should we do one with audio?
Let's go to the other. Let's go to the non-audio stories. You held up multiple stories, so I thought you were asking me to select between them.
I was trying to subtly ask you the question of the audio versus the non-audio so we didn't have to have this discussion on the air.
Yeah, but then the
thus
audience...
Thus creating a seamless entertainment for the people.
The audience, they enjoy seeing what happens behind the curtain. Sometimes they like to hear the sausage being made, Don. Would you like me to get you a series of decorative paper plates that have phrases on them like sound now? Need bathroom. All right.
Well, speaking of sausage, Indian River County, Florida. Do we have the Florida sound?
No. It's not for the show, and B, it's on another soundboard.
John Brown, a 62-year-old Vero Beach man, was jailed Saturday after he was allegedly caught putting stolen hot smoked sausages down his pants. According to an arrest affidavit, Brown strolled into a local Hess fueling station, grabbed a package of hot smoked sausages, and placed them down the back of his pants. Authorities say Brown left the station with the sausages and attempted to get into the vehicle he rode in. When he looked back to see the cashier on the phone, he reportedly dropped the sausage pack, which somehow ended up under the vehicle. Arriving officers reviewed the store's surveillance video, which captured parts of the incident.
I don't understand. He put the sausages down his pants. He got in the car, or he was headed to the car.
Yeah.
The guy calls the cops. He then dropped the sausages, which ended up under the car, but they were in his pants.
They were in his pants first. And then
was he clutching them with his testicles?
Well, he put them in the back of his pants, so they may have fallen down like the leg of his pants.
Okay. So they were not. When you say stuffed them in his pants, I always just think of right down the front. Okay.
Officers said they read Brown his Miranda rights, and at that point he declined to discuss the incident. Brown was booked in the Indian River County Jail and charged with petty theft. Retail value of the purloined sausage is $4.99. Bond was set at $500, and Brown has since been released. Here's a picture of him, too.
He's awesome.
A good-looking man.
Oh, man. Oh, wow. Wow, damn. Okay, I want you to look at this guy's face and just, picture him saying this. You got the shining! Or whatever it is he says. That's a bad Scatman Crothers. You know what I'm trying to go for there.
Yeah, that is. He's got kind of a toothless Scatman Crothers thing.
Wow, it's like Scatman Crothers the way he looks now. Jesus God Almighty! Look, here's the thing. You know what they ought to make for criminals who are just the dumbest people on earth? Criminals ought to be issued, you know, by some sort of, I don't know, some sort of nefarious overlord organization. Like a little pocket laminate that you could carry with. Every time I go to Vegas, I don't know what it is with Canadians, man. Every time I'm in Vegas, I end up at a blackjack table, which is not all that often that I play blackjack. But I'm a fairly decent blackjack player. But every time I end up at the blackjack table, I'm always next to Canadians for some reason. They follow me around. And the Canadians are always doing two things. They're always requesting RC Cola, which nobody ever has. And they are always consulting a little pocket laminate that they've got, like a little business card-shaped thing in there to tell them whether to hit or stay. You know, the dealer will just tell you that, by the way. Or you could, you could commit it to memory. But
that tough.
But they're always consulting a little thing about, I don't know then. I guess I'll stay, buddy. You know, and whatever. And I'm just sitting there just seething and scowling at the table, wondering why Canadians follow me around everywhere. They ought to make one of those for criminals where it'll be, like the crime and then what the approximate bail or bond will be so you can steal at least that much merchandise. Because otherwise, friend, it's a net loss in every way. I mean, I know that the cognitive processes aren't like job one when you're a criminal, but come on, just the bare minimum, will you? Jesus. All right. Well, on that note, let's do this. Let's now bring a curtain down on this edition of Legion of News. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show comes up next. Legion of News is brought to you each and every weekday by PDX.fm and originates live from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Dawn Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill. Our executive producer is Bruce Agler. And chief of staff is Cheryl Kinnikoa. The Rick Emerson Show begins next at rickemerson.com. This has been another exciting installment of
Legion of News on PDX.fm.